Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till midnight. We are in the middle of the movie reviews, and we're about to tell you about all the movies that are you can see in the theater. However, the remake, one of the three 80s remakes that came out this weekend, the remake of Endless Love, neither Colin nor Eric nor myself have seen it. So 312-981-7200 if you would like to join us to review Endless Love. Colin, welcome back, sir.
Hello there.
And Eric, welcome back.
Hello.
All right, quick call before we get to the new movies. Here's Laura on WGN. She's in Chicago. Hi, Laura.
Oh, hi. Quick question, Nick. My friends and me, you have a great weight on whatever we see, your movie reviews with all of your friends there. Regarding Lego, if the Lego movie, if none of us ever played with Legos, we're in our mid-50s, would we still enjoy it as much as you did?
Absolutely, without question.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, Laura. It's a goodbye. Hey, we can take a couple of minutes to talk about the Lego movie. What the hell?
Why not? Sure.
Yeah. How many times have you guys seen it?
Just the one.
Just one. Okay. I saw it twice.
I'm doing tomorrow, though.
I saw it a second time. It's so damn good. It's so awesome. And I got to tell you, man, every single person that I've recommended it to.
Yeah.
Has loved it. Has anybody come across anybody who has not loved this movie?
Yeah, I had one at the Rear Window screening the other night.
What?
Yeah. I wonder if he's a listener. I didn't catch his name. He might be listening right now, but I told him to get out for not liking the Lego movie. But yeah, he didn't seem to dislike it. He just was not on the same level that we were.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't get it myself.
Oh, man. I just love it. I absolutely love it. I thought it was just so great. You guys have seen the bloopers, right?
No, yes.
Oh, you haven't seen the bloopers? They're awesome. They're very funny. It's the wacky, fake cartoon bloopers.
Yeah.
You know, Toy Story did it and stuff like that. And,
are they on YouTube or?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're out on YouTube.
Okay.
Absolutely. I actually posted it on my Facebook page a few days ago.
Okay.
So I don't know if you go to my regular Facebook page and scroll down a lot, you'll see mm-hmm. it's there. But it's out there. All you got to do is just Google Lego Movie bloopers and they'll pop up and they're really hilarious. Really hilarious. So, yeah, great movie, really, really good. I mean, obviously it did massive business and it's still crushing it, right? It did great last night too, didn't it?
Yeah, it's poised to do around a little over another $60 million through Monday.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's a monster hit.
That's good. Good, good, good. I'm really happy mm-hmm. about it. Yeah, if you've not seen the Lego movie, go. Go. Take your friends. Take your family. You don't have to play with Legos in order to enjoy it. It's just so incredibly entertaining and joyful and wonderful and hilarious and really moving, too. You know, the last 20 minutes of the movie, the last 15 minutes of the movie, really, the payoff emotionally is huge, I think.
Absolutely. And all the kids at the school I work with have been singing "Everything Is Awesome" all week. It's like the new anthem at my school.
Yeah,
that's pretty crazy.
Well, it won't. You know what? When you walk out of the movie, that's all you're going to be hearing for the rest of the day.
Right.
In your head, it's going to be repeated over and over again. And there's nothing wrong with that because the song rules.
It's on my iPod.
Yeah. All right. So everybody, go and see the Lego movie. It's one of those movies that kind of came out of nowhere. At a time of year when you expect crappy movies, a movie based on a toy, and it turns out to be just spectacularly entertaining, just great on every level. So, all right, Eric, what in the hell is The Attorney?
The Attorney is a South Korean film that's actually just playing on one screen in Niles.
Yeah.
It's a film that starts off, it looks like it's going to be a bit of a comedy. It's a lawyer, it takes place in 1978, a lawyer who has gotten the laws have changed in South Korea, grants lawyers the rights to be notaries. So when he takes over, he adds that to his practice. Basically, all the notaries in town are losing all the business, so they're very upset with him. But the next thing you know is that as a few years go by, South Korea, is on the hunt for, communists within their own society and stuff. It flash forwards to 1981, and all of a sudden this attorney finds himself at the center of a sort of a civil rights case that he takes on. He goes from poor to, you know, sort of naive to rich, and now he's going to, you know, sort of take on almost like a Mr. Smith type quality against the injustices that are going on in society. And Mr. Smith, I mean, there's a very sort of Capra-esque sort of feel to this, with a little bit more danger and kind of, you know, the sickness of, you know, the society that would, you know, punish people for reading the wrong kinds of books is what this ultimately comes down to. So I actually quite like this movie. It's kind of has this sort of that same sort of arc that we've sort of seen in like A Few Good Men and From the Hip. You know, the sort of the goofball lawyer then has to sort of rise to the occasion.
But it's
very much a serious film. It's very well acted. And if you like that sort of like, you know, kind of rah-rah courtroom type movies, but with a point, this is a film worth seeking out.
Okay, cool. All right, there you go. The Attorney, and it's playing at the AMC in Skokie. All right, that's The Attorney. All right, 312-981-7200. Okay, we talked about this one before, Colin, but tell us again about Tim's Vermeer now that it's in theaters.
All right, well, this is a documentary by Teller of Penn & Teller, and it's about their friend Tim Jennison, who is not really an artist, but somebody who just deeply admires the paintings of Vermeer. And he sets out to investigate just how Vermeer managed to paint such complex paintings, like The Girl with the Pearl Earring. So he sets out, he invents or discovers a technique that allows him to recreate a Vermeer of his own, using a complex set of mirrors and set designs. And that's basically it. He discovers a method whereby he can make a painting every bit as realistic looking as a Vermeer, and, you know, pretty much creates the illusion of a really complex painting. It's a movie that I can't really recommend or not recommend. I recommend it mainly to people who have a serious invested interest in art and the creation of art, and by art I mean paintings, not in the broad sense of the word. I think this would have made a better short documentary. I think expanding it to a feature is kind of unnecessary, and I just don't find the Tim Jennison to be that interesting of a person to focus on for 80 minutes. I think what he does is interesting. I think the technique that he discovers is interesting, but not really compelling enough to warrant, you know, sitting through it for 80 minutes. Once he discovers what he has, I'm kind of done with the movie, and I think that, you know, it could have been a nice 30 or 40 minute short documentary, but at 80 minutes, it's a bit much.
Okay, that one's I still have not been able to put it into my DVR or my DVD player. You know, it's sitting there, and I'm like, am I going to watch that one tonight? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just haven't been inspired enough to pop it in, even though I'm kind of curious about it. But
yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, you guys get to handle Winter's Tale, even though my boyfriend's in it. I didn't get to see it. Eric.
Oh, God.
Tell us about Winter's Tale with my boyfriend, Colin Farrell.
Oh, how much time do we have?
Whatever.
Okay. Well, Colin Farrell plays a young thief in 1914 New York. He's on the run from some gangsters played by, well, the leader of which is played by Russell Crowe.
Of course.
He's about to get, you got about all the scores he can handle. He's about to get himself out of town for good. He decides to break into just one more house, it's the house of a very, very lovely young woman, who happens to be dying from consumption. They strike up almost a very immediate chemistry and finds himself sticking around long enough to be with her. And he wants to be with her, even though he knows that the longer he sticks around, the more likely he's going to be killed. That's about all I can say. If you want, you know, IMDb kind of spoils it by giving a false description of the film. If you go to IMDb, which I don't recommend you do. There are things going on in this movie that you can sort of sense from the trailer, that there are ideas involving heaven and hell, angels and demons, all kinds of weird mystical stuff going on. There's a lot of talk in the movie about everyone owning their own special miracle that is actually not meant for them but meant for someone else. So you have a lot of that kind of talk going on. You have Russell Crowe not quite playing a gangster in the movie. Not so much spoiler alert, because we see that in his very first scene, that he's probably not of this earth. And yet in the movie, Flash goes back to the late 1800s, all the way up to present day, where Colin Farrell is still looks like Colin Farrell. He hasn't really aged. So, yeah, this is a very, very, very odd film. Based on a 1983 book adapted by Akiva Goldsman, making his feature directorial debut. A guy who was, I think everyone thought was one of the worst screenwriters working. Then all of a sudden he makes a couple of good movies with Ron Howard, and he's an Oscar winner. So, well, clearly he called in a lot of favors. Because he wrote a lot of screenplays of a lot of these actors. Jennifer Connelly shows up in the film. There's probably the wackiest cameo you will see of the entire year. And I'm not going to tell you who it is, and I don't go to IMDb because you will figure out who it is. But I'll just say that the casting of Lucifer in the movie is spot on perfect. Okay? Yeah, and I kind of admire the scrotum that it takes to make a movie like this with such a straight face. So I was kind of fascinated, like, where the hell this thing was going to go. I think Colin Farrell and the young woman whose name escapes me at the moment actually have really good chemistry in the film. I enjoyed their scenes together, but knew that they were going to be screwed up by this mystical subplot stuff that's going on. So I'm not recommending the film. There are people that are really digging their nails into this thing, and I can see why. I didn't hate it with that kind of necessity. But it's not a very good movie, especially when the film jumps forward to the present day. It really sort of lost me completely by then. But it's a no to Winter's Tale.
Okay. All right, Colin?
First of all, Eric, enjoy being featured on Straight Outta Context next week.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of hokum in this film. There's just, I don't know. This is one of those movies I try to get behind, but I just can't. It's one of those movies that just kind of introduces a lot of concepts and kind of throws a lot of things at you, particularly in the narration. It's like, what if the stars in the sky were actually miracles? What if we were the miracles? What if every star in the sky was a soul that could create a miracle that could save all of humanity? And it's just like, come on, enough. You can buy into that stuff or not. And I sometimes I can, but in this case, I just couldn't. I had a hard time following the logic of this movie and all the ideas it was kind of throwing at me. As I understand it, people who have read the book say they've made a lot of changes here, and a lot of the movie is nonsense in terms of the context of the book. They screwed up a lot of things. I will take them at their word for it. I'm not about to go read it to find out. There are some nice moments. I think visually there are some interesting moments. But, this is another attempt to, I guess, get the Valentine's Day crowd to show up at a particular romantic movie. Warner Brothers is trying again what they tried last year with Beautiful Creatures, and that didn't work, and that movie's going to start looking really good to people when compared to this one.
Not really.
And, yeah. So Winter's Tale, I can't recommend it. I would love to, buy into its sort of very lovey-dovey nature of it, but I just had a hard time buying into it.
Okay. All right, that's Winter's Tale. Looks like an odd film, and ever since I saw the commercials for it, I was like, what the hell's going on? All right. Eric, Colin, hang on. We're going to talk more with these guys and review some more movies. And if you saw Endless Love, the remake, call us now, 312-981-7200. What are your options when your job search fails? How some local students adapted to a changing job market and how you can, too. Monday on WGN TV News 9. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And Colin and Eric are with me. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we welcome these guys back. Hey, the other movie that we wanted to mention really quickly before we get to the big ones is the Rocket. What the hell is The Rocket?
The Rocket is a film that's playing at the Music Box. It's a film set in Laos. About a young boy who was born a twin and was deemed bad luck by his grandmother. And then to prove that he's not the bad luck case that his family seems to think he is, enters a rocket building contest.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've heard nothing but great things. Unfortunately, I tried to watch it this evening and had a lot of stutter problems with my screening link.
Oh, okay.
So I was unfortunate not to see the entire movie.
Okay, well, it's getting good reviews, real good reviews, and it's now playing at the Music Box, and you can see it over at the Music Box, and it's called The Rocket. Okay, you guys, hang on. When we come back, we're going to talk about we'll talk about Last Night and RoboCop. Two of the other 80s remakes that are out now. And then we will talk about some of the remakes that we like. Right, guys?
Yes, sure.
All right, cool. Hang on a second. All right, we'll take a quick break. The news is coming up next. Then it's remake time on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're talking about movies. Colin Suter, Eric Childress always join me. Let's bring them back. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, Colin, tell us about Last Night.
All right. Well, this is a remake of the 1986 rom-com based on the play by David Mamet. And basically, it's kind of the same as before. Danny is now played by Kevin Ealy, and Debbie is played by Jill Bryant. They meet, they have a one-nighter, and then they see each other again and again and again, and their relationship develops until she finally moves in with him, much to the chagrin of her roommate Joan, who's played by Regina Hall. And Danny's best friend, Bernie, played by Kevin Hart. And everything is going okay until there is an eventual strain in their relationship from cohabitating together. Just like the original, Danny and Bernie work together at a restaurant supply business, and there's some stress involved with that. The biggest change from the original film, and I never saw the play, is that this time Bernie and Joan are in an on-again, off-again relationship from the very beginning of the movie.
and that provides most of the comedic fodder. And also Danny and Debbie buy a dog together, which didn't happen in the original. But for the most part, the film follows the same structure. And unfortunately, this is not an example of a good remake. It is pretty much your standard rom-com. I think the two leads are appealing enough. Kevin Healy and Joy Bryant, I think they're good. But all the stuff involving Kevin Hart and Regina Hall is really just, it's farce, it's slapstick, it's broad, it's forced. It just doesn't belong here at all. And it's just, you know, they're basically playing your standard best friend characters in these movies. They don't really provide much of an insight into relationships in general. And really, neither does the movie. A lot of the situations kind of feel forced in there. All the stuff with the restaurant that Danny likes to go to, he's been, you know, has sort of a sentimental attachment to. That part of the movie feels really forced. There's a really badly written dialogue exchange between him and the restaurant owner about, you know, how they're going to go into business together. There's a lot of just, it's sort of just awkwardly edited, awkwardly directed. There's a lot of really sort of weird, misplaced establishing shots in this movie that feel like stock footage. It's just kind of strange. This is a movie that, you know, wants to, you know, be, you know, revered because it's, referencing a movie that at the time of its release in 1986, had something to say about relationships at that time. I think, you know, I don't know if you've seen, when the last time you saw the 86 movie, but I watched it a couple of years ago, and I think it's a product of its time. I think there's really great things in it, but it's kind of, it's a little dated. There's not much, you know, more to it than you see in your average romantic comedy. I think the best stuff in that movie was the stuff between Jim Belushi and who played
Elizabeth Perkins? Elizabeth
Perkins, right. I think that was the best stuff. And this movie, like, just completely, you know, craps on that, all of that, and turns it into this stupid, little on-again, off-again relationship between the two. Totally misses the dynamic. So really not a very good film. Can't recommend it at all.
Okay, I'm not a fan of the original at all. Because I love the play, and what they did to the play was they murdered that play. And no offense to Tim Kazurinsky, who I like very much, and Denise DeClue. They're both great people, and I like them, and they've written other stuff that I like, and I think Tim Kazurinsky's a great guy. But they took a very, very dark David Mamet play, a great David Mamet play, and they just turned it into as generic a romantic comedy as you can possibly imagine, completely taking the edge off of Mamet's original material. This goes even further away from Mamet than the original did. And I am stunned that Steve Pink directed this movie. Because I think Steve, first of all, Chicago guy. And I'm surprised he took this because it was going to be obviously a high profile project. Because, you know, everything Kevin Hart is in now is the biggest, you know, movie ever made. But it is really ineptly directed. You're right. And not that this guy's made great. I like Accepted, and I didn't like Hot Tub Time Machine, but it was better than this. Putting those two characters, those best friend characters together, is a fatal flaw, like a huge mistake that's not even broached in the play Sexual Perversity in Chicago. There's nothing really going on here that you haven't seen in 9,000 other movies. And again, it's as far removed from the source material as you can possibly get. This is not a good movie. I totally agree with you, Colin. I think I liked it even less than you did. If that's possible. And again, I didn't like the original. So, all right, Eric, RoboCop.
Yeah, we had a remake.
Yeah, another remake.
Yeah. Okay. This RoboCop. It is a reboot or revamp of the original 1987 Paul Verhoeven classic. In the future, the defense robots are being used overseas for our protection and for to keep the peace as best they can. Back home, there is some debate in the government and in society about the use of such machines, particularly the idea that they are actually too effective and they don't really have the capacity for thought, that they will just carry out their orders and not give a second thought to who or what they are harming. So there's a bill that's being passed to prevent any kind of robot protection on the homeland soil. Mr. Murphy, who now played by Joel Kinnaman, was played by Peter Weller in the original, and he's you know, hard-nosed cop, and he's just nearly killed in the line of duty. He has some limbs removed and a big explosion and loss of most percentage of his body. So Michael Keaton plays the head of the robot. He's like the top robot designer company guy, and he involves to get a human inside a robot suit. So to use the human brain patterns for the capacity for that sort of that, you know, those times when thought would be used. But it's really just to sort of appease the public. Gary Oldman plays a doctor who deals with robot prosthetics, who's assigned to help him design the suit. Samuel Jackson plays a maybe right-wing, maybe left-wing, sort of blurred the politics, television commentator who sort of gives the running commentary throughout the film. So this film actually, for like the first hour, is really kind of consciously trying to separate itself as much as it possibly can from what the original was. It doesn't really hit a lot of the same beats. It doesn't set itself up to have a real major villain, which is one of many flaws of this movie. But it's trying to hit upon some other interesting ideas that the Verhoeven film kind of did, but they did so in a more satiric approach. This movie is actually trying to be a little bit more human, if you will. So the first hour actually sort of held my interest in just to see if they were going to find a way to pay off some of these ideas, even though it's not really the sort of the slam bang action film with a wink in its eye that the original film did. But then the last 40 minutes kind of betrays itself by not really having anywhere to go with these ideas. And so instead of rebooting itself completely, it just starts to sort of remake itself. And the last 40 minutes follow a very similar pattern to the original film, and that's when the comparison stuff starts to creep in, and really does the film a disservice. I thought one major problem with this movie is that if they would have just sort of made it like RoboCop 4 instead of just trying to redo the entire thing, I think that some of a little bit of that speculation would have subsided. We could have just sort of seen a new director's vision on where the line of RoboCop was going to go in a new, post 9/11 society. But because Ed 209s are functional and working in Iran when the movie starts. So I think that's a huge problem. I don't think it quite pays off all the ideas that it wants about the human inside the suit and the emotions and clamping down on those emotions when it gets into. The villain who sort of takes over the Clarence Boddicker role is so bland. It's crazy how bland that character is. I couldn't figure out half the movie whether or not RoboCop was tasing someone or shooting someone. So that bothered me too. So it's not the all out train wreck that I was expecting. But I am far from recommending the remake of RoboCop.
All right, Colin.
I like the movie a little bit more than you do. I think it does follow through on some of its ideas, and the fact that it even has more ideas than I expected going into it, that it actually does what a good remake should do, or at least attempt to do, which is find a new way into the story and not just repeat everything that the original did, but also try to make it relevant to today, which I think the movie does a sincere attempt to try and do, to sort of touch upon gun laws and the use of drones in war, and either overseas or in the homeland. These are debates that are going on today. And, I think the movie, justifies itself, or at least, makes an honest, sincere attempt to justify itself by touching on these things. And I like the first hour like you did. I like it quite a bit, actually. I think that it's a much more methodical way of telling the story than the original was. Pose a lot of the questions about, the humanity and machines and, is this really the way that, society should go in to try and, prevent crime? I think the movie is a little more thoughtful than I was expecting it to be. I agree the last 40 minutes are, it's a little too conventional. There's not much of a director's style it kind of lacks a personality, and you're right, there's no real villain to really remember or worth remembering here. So all those aspects about it, when compared to the original are obviously it's inferior. But as remakes go, I think it's a cut above the usual of this sort of thing, and I wouldn't steer people away from it. I think there's more to admire here than I expected.
Yeah, I'm more with Eric on this.
I kind of figured.
Yeah, I was not looking forward to this movie at all. I will say this: it wasn't as horrifyingly horrible as I thought it was going to be. I love the original RoboCop, and I love the tone that Verhoeven uses, that insane Verhoeven satirical style that I adore about the movie. RoboCop to this day, the original, as I'm speaking of, to this day, it's a movie that's violence really gets under my skin. The violence in RoboCop is especially the death of Peter Weller. I mean, that is, to this day, I can hardly watch that scene. I mean, that scene is one of the most insanely over-the-top, violent, effective scenes I've ever seen. And, when I heard it was going to be PG-13, all right, I'll say this. The effects are good. There are a couple of good performances. Some of the ideas are more interesting than I thought they would be. But to me, this is just an exercise in futility. This movie should have never been made. It does go down a different road, so it's not a carbon copy like Carrie was, which is one of the most completely unnecessary remakes of all time. And I also think that Let the Right One In, whatever the hell, Let Me In, was another one that should have never been made. This one, at least, they tried to do something different. They tried to make it timely so it didn't seem dated. But overall, it didn't do anything for me. I was not emotionally involved. I didn't care. The last 45 minutes of the movie is, standard and not very good. So overall, not as horrible as I thought it was going to be, but there's no way that I would recommend anybody see this movie. So now let's talk about some good remakes. Let me throw a few titles out there, okay?
Yeah.
Then you guys jump in. Obviously, I think the best remake of all time to me is John Carpenter's The Thing. I would rank that maybe as the best. And I also like, it's not, I mean, it's Brian De Palma's Scarface is one of my favorite remakes of all time. The Departed, I think, is a great remake. 310 to Yuma is one that doesn't get talked about a lot, but is great. Speaking of Westerns, True Grit, I think, is a great remake. The Fly is a great remake. And I really enjoyed the Evil Dead remake from last year. I know there's a bunch more, but I'll let you guys jump in. Eric, what about you? What are some of your favorites?
Some of them, you mentioned, a lot of good ones. You said The Fly, right?
Yeah.
Okay, The Fly. The sci-fi ones always seem to be, the some of the better ones. I'm a big fan of the 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Well, I feel about that series.
Oh yeah,
like
it's hard to screw it up.
That's how I feel about the Body Snatchers. The Invasion of the Body Snatchers is, I like every version of that movie.
Yeah,
I like every version of that movie. I love three of them, and I like the fourth one.
Yeah, if only they could do a body snatcher movie on a submarine, you'd be in heaven. So that one, Peter Jackson's King Kong.
Oh God, yeah,
I think it's terrific. Yeah. Christopher Nolan's Insomnia.
Ooh, yeah, good one.
A really terrific remake.
Yeah.
The Magnificent Seven, I think is a lot of fun. And Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds, I think is a terrific remake.
Those are all good. I agree with all of those. All right, Colin, what about you, man?
All right, well, you took a lot of mine. Vanilla Sky, I really like.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Remake of Open Your Eyes. Fright Night.
Yeah.
A couple years
ago. Overlooked one.
Yeah, good one.
Really terrific. There's one last year, We Are What We Are, although I've never seen the original.
That's a great one, Colin. The original's not very good.
Okay, good.
That's a good one.
And Eric, you mentioned War of the Worlds. I'll just throw another Spielberg one at you, Always. The remake of A Guy Named Joe.
Yeah, that's a terrific movie.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that movie, too.
And then the remake, one of the two Snyder movies I like, Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, another good one.
And Dawn of the Dead is a good one. What about, some of the movies that in the early days, like the Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments is a remake.
Yeah, Hitchcock's Man Who Knew Too Much.
Man Who Knew Too Much, yeah, that's also a remake, and a good one, too. What about The Star is Born? Probably the Judy Garland version is probably the one that everybody loves the most.
I'd go with Affair to Remember.
Affair to Remember, yep. Okay.
Remake of Love Affair.
Yep. And then, one of my favorite Warren Beatty movies of all time is Heaven Can Wait.
Uh-huh.
Which is a remake of Here Comes Mr. Jordan, which is a really terrific movie. I had forgotten, I'm looking at this list here, and I had forgotten that Ransom was a remake.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's from 1956 film. I've never seen it.
It's the same premise?
Yeah.
Really?
Pretty much the same premise, yeah.
That was based on a book, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's,
I will throw Ocean's 11, Soderbergh's film. I think is a lot of fun.
I will say The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the Fincher version, which I think is better than the original.
It is.
And how about Nosferatu, Werner Herzog's Nosferatu?
Sure.
Yeah. So sure. There's a lot of good ones out there. Just they didn't come out this week.
Right.
And now nobody saw Endless Love, man. I bet that thing is tanking. Is it tanking?
No, it's not. It's actually doing better than RoboCop.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yep. If RoboCop opened on Wednesday, so people saw it on Wednesday and Thursday, but through the 3-day weekend or through the 4-day weekend, they're looking like Endless Love is going to edge it out.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
That's some crazy talk.
Yeah. You know, I've never seen the original.
You've never seen the original Endless Love?
No. I tried watching it this morning on Netflix. It's streaming on Netflix.
Yeah.
And it was streaming. The sound kept going in and out of it. And I thought that was maybe a stylistic choice by Franco Zeffirelli. So I couldn't watch it.
You have to see it, Eric.
I know.
Yeah. You have to see it. It was funny. We were talking about it the other night, and I was like, how many people can remember who played the lead in In Endless Love? Like this guy, they were touting this guy big time when that movie came out. And I was on with Cochran doing Crosstalk Friday morning, and I was like, does anybody remember the actor who played opposite Brooke Shields? And everybody was like, oh, Brooke Shields, remember? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then a lot of people forgot that was Tom Cruise's first movie.
And James Spader, too, right?
I'm sorry?
James Spader?
Spader's in it, but there's a key moment that Tom Cruise has in the movie. At one point, Martin Hewitt, by the way, is the actor's name. He was so obsessed with Brooke Shields, the family doesn't want him to date, obviously. So Tom Cruise is the one that gives him the idea to set the fire that burns down their house.
Okay.
Yeah, so you got to see this movie. It's absolutely insane, man. It's completely insane. Colin, I mean, am I right or what?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I watched it a couple of years ago just on a lark. It's been streaming on Netflix for the last couple of years. And it hasn't really been readily available, I don't think, on DVD or...
I don't think it's on DVD.
No, I don't think it's on DVD either, no. But it is an absolutely insane movie, Eric. You have to see it.
It is
completely insane. Franco Zeffirelli, I don't know what the hell was going on. And then, of course, you've got the famous song.
That's the only thing anyone remembers.
Yeah. Well, the movie's very special, Eric. Try and watch it again.
Okay.
All right, what do we got next week, real quick?
We got Pompeii and 3 Days to Kill.
3 Days, oh, boy.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. That'll be directed by McGee and written by Luc Besson. That's not going to suck too much.
And Pompey is Paul W.S. Anderson.
That's right. Fantastic. Oh, it ought to be a good week. There's a February weekend for you. All right, you guys, take care. Really. Thanks a lot, you guys. We'll talk to you next week. There's Colin and there's Eric. And Colin and Eric. All right, we'll take a quick break.